Welcome back, everybody, to Soulful Conversations. It's Ash Gruenwald here, and we're happening again. I had a couple of months off while I've been just touring the country like a maniac, launching Surf by Day, Jam by Night, my first book, and also my album Mojo. And it's just been so rewarding to be out there and meeting so many people who've been tuning into the podcast. I know that it does mean a lot to a lot of people. It means that the world to me doing this podcast. Some of the conversations that we've had have just been amazing. So if this happens to be your first one, we've got about six other episodes. So jump in there and do the deep dive and snaffle them up, because there's a lot of wisdom in there. Anyway, I know you're going to enjoy this podcast with my good friend, Mr. Bobby Alu, who is currently touring his album Flow, and he's touring the country, and we just had the best of chats, as we always do. So without further ado, Mr. Bobby Alu. Welcome to Soulful Conversations with Ash Gruenwald. In this podcast, we interview inspiring and amazing people, musicians, surfers, and experts in mindset, creativity, health, well-being, and making the world a better place. I'm tired of beating around the bush. I want to go deep and have a soulful conversation.
This podcast is brought to you by Earth Bottles. At Earth Bottles, we are on a mission to end single-use plastics, offering a full range of beautiful double-insulated bottles, reusable coffee cups, food and tea canisters, stainless steel straws, bags, and lots of plastic-free eco-goodies. Earth Bottles proudly supports the Breast Cancer Network of Australia, Beyond Blue, Hope for Health, Clean Coast Collective, 15 Trees, Bali Baby House, and the UN Refugee Agency. So head over to www.earthbottles.com.au for a 10% discount using the promo code ASHLOVESME. Together, we can make a change and break up with single-use plastics.
Okay, here we are, Soulful Conversations, Byron Bay edition. We're at the Pass Caravan Park in my motorhome, and I am joined by none other than Mr. Bobby Alu. How are you going, brother?
Greetings, Ash. Great to be here. Great to see you, as always.
Now, you got a little album coming out in August, I think?
Yeah, sometime soon, August or September. You know what it's like, albums. They always take time, but it's definitely finished and just kind of like tying the bow.
Beautiful stuff. Now, we're all formal about this, the way we started this podcast, but really we're not formal at all, people. And we've been friends for a long time, and we just, every time we get together, we have an absolute laugh. And that's one of the things I love about Bobby. One of the many things. He is a funny, funny, funny character. And I guess we got to know each other a lot better when we did a tour together around America with Xavier Rudd. I was doing the supports and Bobby was actually playing drums, because that's another string to this character's many bows. I don't know how those work, but the guy's also one of the best drummers around. What can we say about that bloody tour? We had a ball, that's one thing.
Yeah, that was great. US is a huge place, so being stuck on a bus with Rudd and you and Uncle Teo for, I think it was about a month or maybe more, just kind of sailing around, was a good time. A lot of great adventures, too many laughs, and now just awesome epic memories.
And we could delve into a couple of those. I mean, yeah, there were some really extreme ones. We certainly did have a good time. And we might come back to that. But Let's go back into history. I mean, I just, as people of the fans of the podcast will know, I'm just about to release a little book, and this is my little sideways way of plugging that, of course. But, you know, going through Jack Johnson, Pete Murray, Dave Rastovich, many of these successful people, they actually had a sporting career before their music career. And I'm like, wow, it's just so staggering. I mean, I grew up doing a lot of sports and taking it seriously too. Now, you had an athletic career, Bubbler. Give us the big rundown on that.
Yeah, it was, it's strange to think about that because it feels so far away, so long ago.
Keep going. So, people, I'm just spinning this microphone around.
It's strange to think about, the past and my athletics career because it was so long ago. But at the time, it was everything. You know, it was, you know, I used to train every afternoon after school. But basically, yeah, I did athletics. I was a sprinter. I did hurdles as well and long jump. And I basically did it all through high school. And I broke heaps of records, and it was just it's weird talking about it because it seems so long ago, but yeah, it was a good time. Like, I remember when I one of the big things for me was breaking 11 seconds in the 100. I did it when I was 15, and I did a lot of hurdles. I represented Australia and Queensland, and you know, it was definitely a big part of my life.
Wow, I didn't know you are a humble dude, because I knew you killed it. I didn't know you represented Australia. So what was that in?
It was in hurdles. It was in the 110-metre hurdles at the, I think it was like the Youth Olympics or something like that. It was, Australia has one of the best athletics programs for juniors. Like, there's a lot of opportunity. The hard thing is just, like, stepping over from junior to senior and professional. I think out of all the people I ran with, I probably knew maybe three out of hundreds that basically made it to the Olympics and won medals, you know.
So it just is interesting because, like, in general life, you don't bump into many people who represented Australia for this and that. There's a few around. But I just find from interviewing people, there's a lot of musos that no one thinks of music connected to athletics or anything. What do you think? And I'm thinking, I'm leading you down a path here maybe, but, like, I think there's some psychological attributes that sports people have that get to a high level. I mean, is there anything that you think you took when you left that you took into your music?
Yeah, that's a good point, Ash. I think I did, you know, even though sport and music are, you know, one would say they're pretty unrelated. Actually, they are quite similar in the focus and the, you know, the routines that you have to go through. And, you know, for me, I literally stopped doing athletics and started music. It was like the baton change, you know, one stopped and the other. Like, I figured, you know, I remember just on an oval, you'd have to run around in circles till you spewed, you know, stacking up against, like, playing music and probably only spewing from too much alcohol. You know, I it was easy for me to decide which one I preferred. And, but just automatically changing careers as such, you know, I already kind of had that focus and drive just to practice or just to play heaps of gigs. And, you know, like, it's grueling on the road. Like, that tour that we went on in the US, you know, you play every night. You wake up in a new city, you kind of have a look around, might go for a run or something, then you do sound check, then you have dinner, then you do the show, then you go to sleep, and then you wake up, repeat, next city. You know, it is kind of like day in, day out. So yeah, I guess going from sport to music is, you know, that seemed pretty easy.
Mm. Yeah, I think if there's any talent that people who come from an athletic career have, it's focus.
Mm.
And it's funny, on this podcast, interviewing people, you know, I think all of the people I've interviewed this would work for, but I see it in, you know, it's funny how I started the podcast with John Butler, who's very focused and wise.
And then I went straight to Ziggy Elberts, who's killing it.
Mm.
And, you know, it was, I just did a tour. I just did a gig with Bigsy, his sound guy. And Bigsy was we were saying how good it is and how he's killed it. And he was saying, it's not that long ago we were setting up for a Sea Shepherd gig in Brunswick Heads at a free, you know, benefit gig. And now, you know, now he's playing Sydney Mime Music Bowl in, you know. But then when I interviewed him, that focus, I was just blown away by his level of focus at such a young age. It's just interesting when you meet people who are very successful. It seems like there's a little bit of a backstory there. You realise there's some depth and, you know, maybe I'm wondering if the main gift that anyone has in life is focus.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? And, yeah, man, Ziggy, what a great human. And John as well, you know, basically, you know, anyone that we probably look up to, you could see that's what they have, that's what they hold. But, you know, I guess for me it's getting harder to not be distracted. And for me, like, focus is just not being distracted, you know. Basically, you know, with our little rectangle machines that live in our pockets, like, you can just be distracted like that. You know, you pick up your phone, you're like, oh, you're on this path, you're on that path. And, yeah, you know, basically if you can just kind of just solidly focus on one thing and give it all your love and attention, then that'll get the best it can.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Last week I did this thing down in Melbourne, a thing for APRA. If people don't know, what's that, Australian Performers Rights Association or something, but it's the songwriters. It's for songwriters. I was giving advice to songwriters and I said a lot of things, but one of the main things was don't watch Netflix and don't... and Netflix is great. Don't watch Netflix and don't scroll. You know, like, when you get on your phone, have that, be that kung fu master, be Master Oogway, who can get on social media and do something you want to do without watching what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, it's true, you know. And you know, I also was speaking to someone recently about that whole scenario. And, you know, I feel like with focus, you know, if you're going to watch Netflix, then just do it, you know, but just kind of be present. Just know that's your hour off, you know. You don't have to think about anything right now, and all you're going to do is watch, you know, Narcos or something like that.
Watch
a Mexican drug lord, you know. Just kind of be in that world for an hour, and then when it's gone, it's kind of like then you shift your focus into being productive or being whatever, you know. I think it's just kind of easy to be distracted. And when you kind of give relaxation your full focus, or you give, like, work your full focus, it's just kind of like zoning on that thing. That's kind of my battle. And, yeah, you know, I really love it when I get it right, when I'm like, boom, I kept my focus and I was in the game there. Love that.
Wow. That's a really worthy aim. I think if I've learnt anything in the last, you know, couple of years, I think that's what it is. It's a subtle thing. Mm. And I like how you said that. If you're going to watch Netflix, do it, you know. It's almost like just taking control of your... this sounds like a weird self-help thing, but, like, taking control of your life and going, right, this is what I'm doing right now. I'm choosing all the things that are in your life, because it's really easy. Oh, there's some cool quote, I just can't quite remember it, you know, like, you got to make those decisions, or the people around you will make those decisions for you, and you can spend your whole life just floating and kind of doing it, kind of doing all the same things, but you're not actively choosing it. It's like, you know, like, you could have the best ship ever, but, like, if you're not steering it, you know, like, actively steering and say, you know what, let's get out a map. Let's go to Bermuda. No, not Bermuda. That's the place you don't want to go. Stay away from that triangle. But, you know, like, this is where we want to go. Let's go to Samoa.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right. And, it, like, that's, I think the analogy is, like, well, one of them is, like, you're either in the grandstand or you're on the court. You know what I mean? Like, you're either just watching what's going down or you're actually in there and you're determining what's going down, you know? And that is a powerful place, you know? If you, like everyone, I feel like we all want to be heard. We all have got these things that we want to do, but it's like, all you have to do is do it. What a crazy concept. It is amazing how hard it is, though.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the word that people give, I think we're talking around something here. I think the word people give to it is mindfulness. It's like, or they say, be here now, or there's a million ways of saying it, but whatever you do, be there. And I don't think there's ever been a harder time to do that and to maintain that focus. And like Ziggy said in his interview with me about those miraculous devices in our pockets, it's a good chance to deal with addiction. And I was just I was just checking out my man, Sadhguru. I love him. He's so hilarious. And I was talking, I know I talked about to John about him in the first podcast, but they were asking him about gadgets. And he was saying, you know, like, he uses them every day and he loves them, but they never use him. And people blame the miraculous little square thing in your pocket. But the problem is your compulsiveness. Work on your addictions and your being compulsive. And that's what you're saying, is like, make your everything you do intentional.
Yeah, totally. You know, and it goes with that. This, you know, really simple things too. Like, you know, I just think, you know, with my partner, and, you know, I could be, there's so many times where I'm sort of half on my phone, or I'm half doing this one thing and half doing that and half hanging out with her. And, you know, I find it's just much better if I just choose one of those things.
You know?
And I'm there and I'm present, you know, I'm just like, hang on a sec. You know, I just kind of need to finish this, and then I'm locked in, I'm focused, I finish it, because when you are focused, you finish things quicker, you know, and then just move on. Like, there's a full stop, and now I'm present with you right now. You know, I just feel like that's just, you know, it's fair to the other person, it's fair to you, and, you know, it gives you a good shot at just kind of enjoying now and enjoying the situation you're in.
I saw that guy, Jay Shetty, on the internet, and he had a great theory. I think it was him. He had a great theory. He's like, he was saying something similar, like, there's nothing more important than your ability to focus.
Yeah.
So you need to practice that every day. Wow. Anything you practice every day, you'll get good at, which I agree with. I wrote a song about that on my second album called Every Day. Because it can be bitching. It can be anything you practice. You can practice negativity. You can practice making excuses. You can practice eating cream donuts. You can practice drinking. So anything you do every day, you get better at. So he's like, the most important thing in life is to be able to focus, like we're saying. So a deeply spiritual practice is to practice focusing on something you do every day. Well, you talk to your partner every day. So when you're speaking to your partner, concentrate 100%. This is your spiritual practice. Concentrate on what your partner is effing saying and listen to them. So I suggested that to Danny, my wife. She hasn't started yet. I'm hoping she will.
Everything's a work in progress. It is. But, yeah, that's so true, isn't it? You know, it's like... yeah, far out. It's, you know, it basically, when you focus, I feel like you listen, you know, because it's like, and that's in music, you know, it's in music, the most important thing for me is listening, you know, it's kind of like, that's how you get great, is basically by being, you know, focused, present in the moment, and just like listening to everything that's coming in, all the information that's coming in, so you can supply information, i.e. music, drums, uke, singing, whatever it is, and you can be the best fit for that moment. And so the same's with combos, you know, it's like, you know, there's always those people in your life that just talk at you and it's kind of like, it's just not that pleasant. You know, it's much better if you're kind of both present and listening to each other, you know. It's surprising how hard it is to get there, though.
Yeah, it's a worthy aim. I think any thought process is like a sit-up or a push-up or something. You've got to build that muscle, and building that concentration muscle I think it's emerging, and it will continue to emerge as one of the most important things for our happiness on the inside and our success. So I remember you saying that in a big part of this new album that you're working on, or that I think it might have been even pre-production or coming into the album, is flow. So can you tell me a bit more what you meant by that?
Sure. Well, the next, I wrote a bunch of songs, you know, over 3 or 4 years, and then I realised that they're all about the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and basically what was on my mind is this kind of flow state, or just being in flow. And the kind of analogy that I've sort of put to that is just when things feel good, you know, when they're right. Like, you know, I see, you know, you can, when you see like a bricklayer just kind of killing it, and you can just see them like in the zone, or like sports, like I watched the last NBA season, and you know, seeing some of those players when they're just in complete flow, like nothing can touch them, and you're just like, what is that? You know, dancers, surfers, like I always find that with Dave Rustovich, like, you know, watching him surf is like watching someone in complete flow. It's beautiful to watch. And I see that with Harry Angus when he's playing music. He's a real flower, you know, like that state inspires me, and like it reminds me, when I see someone in that state, it reminds me to find my flow. And like, you know, I wrote all these songs about when flow's bad, when it's good, and you know, I really sort of tried to tune into that to dictate, you know, the path of my life and where I was kind of headed.
Wow. I gather that you wrote songs about that. If you're anything like me, you probably wrote those songs because you just can't help writing those songs because that's what you're thinking about. Is there a hope that people get something out of that? What's your hope for the people who listen to that?
Yeah, it is, you know. I think, like, it's funny, this, you know, I've always written music that's pretty light, and, you know, I like to be not so serious, you know, we have a good time. Mm. But you know, I guess this, you know, this last record, it was pretty much a mental health record for me, yeah, basically, right. You know, it was just kind of going through these realizations, and a bit like, you know, your path, and, you know, I'm inspired by your journey. Especially the last few years, as we've gotten closer and hearing about, you know, what you're up to. It's just kind of like, you know, you really do have to, you know, be present and be on the court in finding and being in charge of your life, because you are, you know. And so, yeah, basically these songs are just kind of snapshots of times when, you know, when I was realising the flow was real bad and I had to change it up, or when it's like just rocking and you're like, holy crap, I love this, you know, I love my life right now, and it's not necessarily what everyone else thinks it should be, it's what I think it is. And yeah, it's just been the focus for me the last few years.
Wow. Now I'm thinking about flow, I'm thinking about changing things up, and it's funny, years ago when I lived in Byron, there's a couple of good drummers, and some of the best drummers in Byron. I'm playing with one of them, Pete Wilkins. There's another,
agreed,
another two that I was always like, these guys are cats. And it was you, and it was Grant Garrity. And then you ended up playing with Rudd, and Grant ended up playing with John Butler, which was absolutely insane to see it go down. And then now you've both on very good terms with those guys, so this is not a gossip column here, but you've both chosen to leave that. I just think, you know, when there's a gig where you're playing, touring the world, playing to gazillions of people, and it's just like high fives and, you know, it's everybody killing it. The cork is flying out of the champagne after every gig.
Literally.
But you guys have chosen to leave that, and you're both happy. So can you tell us a bit more about that? Because, like, I know that can be – I've had a few things like that in my life, and it can be really hard to make those choices sometimes, but I think often you end up happy from them.
Yeah, totally. It is, man. It was a really hard choice because, you know, the Xavier gig for me was insane. It was amazing. You know, like, I literally met the guy at a Coliseum Gas charity event in Lismore, and there was probably, like, you know, 50 people there. Like, it was not very well organised and, you know, quite small. But basically we met, and then he literally was like, oh, good to meet you. Love how you play. Do you want to have a jam? You know, so I went to his house in New Brighton, and we that little shack, and we had a 20-minute jam, and then he said, "Great, sounds great. Let's do a gig." And so then he's like, "I've got a gig next week. Do you want to play?" And I was like, "All right, cool." And then the gig was Blues Fest. So, you know, like, I guess 10 years earlier, I went to my first Blues Fest as a punter, you know, and I think it was like, I don't know, early 20s. And actually, I don't even know, but I remember just thinking, that's amazing, and I want to do that, you know. I'd love to play. I'd love to know what that feels like. And I remember in my head I was like, oh, I'd be really well rehearsed and, you know, have like, everything will just be right. But basically a Rudd rocks up, and, yeah, so we had this 20-minute rehearsal. It was an hour set, rocked up to the gig. And there I am with in-ears for the first time, side stage, you know, 10, 15,000 people, and then on stage doing an hour set after a 20-minute jam. It was quite, and it was great. It went really well because then the next day he was like, that was great, let's go to the US. So, and that started 5 years of an amazing friendship and epic gigs. And, you know, like, so to leave that was not, yeah, it was interesting. You know, I just sort of felt, yeah, it was, it kind of ties in, like, some of these songs that I wrote sort of touch on the feelings I had. And basically, yeah, it just, I just kind of felt like I would be doing it for the wrong reasons. And I had this feeling that I wanted to be home more. I wanted to, you know, give, sort of write my own songs a bit more and sort of follow that path. And my creativity was flowing there, but I had this like weird thing stopping me, you know, I don't know why, but just, it just felt like it was the wrong thing to do, to stay in this gig with Zave. And so, yeah, it just kind of happened. And basically, you know, I decided to leave. And I remember it was a really tough choice. But basically, in order to make that decision, I remember thinking, holy crap, this is going to be tough. So I basically started training. I started getting fitter and doing daily meditation because I just really wanted to make sure I was making the right choices for me, not for other people.
Wow.
And
can I interrupt?
Yeah.
So in the way of mental like you wanted to have your mental training up to scratch to make a good decision because it was a big decision. Yeah. So you trained your brain and lifestyle to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I just think like, yeah, I just kind of felt, because I feel so strongly about both those things, you know, like the Zave camp I loved, you know, like I loved this new journey that I was about to embark on and my dreams, and I just felt like there was a lot distracting me, and I just kind of wanted to be fit and healthy to make, you know, just to make good choices, because, you know, I felt like this was a big choice in my life. And also, like, it was a great incentive for me to be more healthy, wow. You know, to get fitter and to feel good in my body. And yeah, so basically that happened. I took some time out with my lady, and we kind of, yeah, I just made the choice and moved forward. And it was beautiful, you know. It was a great thing. Like, I'm still really close buddies with Zave and his team. And, you know, I've kind of like opened up this new possibility with my own music and my travels and my experiences, and yeah, I'm really happy about it.
And since then, you've actually supported Xavier, and you've supported John Butler, and you supported Trevor Hall, and what other stuff?
Oh, totally. You know, it's kind of like, I think of it as like your life is kind of like a garden. You know, you've got all these plants, and you're fostering them, you're watering them, you're doing everything you can. And then, like, basically, you know, your life gets to a point that's so full, your garden's so full, you got to pull stuff out, you know, so other things grow. And I sort of was like, you know, I basically just pulled out a massive tree that was really great and I loved. But now with that space, you know, with the space in my life, I just had all these other opportunities that came by. And, you know, last year was an amazing year. Yeah, I supported a lot of amazing artists and you know, sort of built more friendships and had more adventures. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, it just, you know, for me, last year was more important for me to make my own music to a room of 100 people than it was to, like, you know, play drums for someone else to 20,000. You know, like the gratification that I had in my heart was much greater. Mm. And, like, that just made me feel much better. So I feel like it's a no-brainer to have chosen that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if Bobby can leave that great gig playing drums, you, in your day job, leave now. You're listening to this on the way to work. Leave now. Only joking. But I don't want to be responsible for that. But, you know, it should be. I mean, I think it's a good inspiration to a lot of people. I mean, I had that with a Triple J gig that I used to do years ago.
Yeah,
you know, right. It was like right in the middle of the Roots thing. And when the Roots thing was so huge and kind of almost mainstream. And that Triple J Roots show was a big part of that. And for me, it was like almost a hard ego thing of like, oh, I don't really want to be doing this anymore. I love it, but it's like too much work and
yeah.
It's too much like a day job. And but it took me a fair few months to actually want, like, to leave that, because it's like, you know, your whole life, all you ever dream about is, you know, you're living your dream when you're doing these certain things, and to walk away from a really good opportunity just feels counterintuitive sometimes. So it's a brave person who can do that.
Mm.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, you're a bit of a bitzer like me. We're those little coloured guys. My dad's coloured South African. And where's your mum from?
My mum's Samoan.
So what effect does that, anyone who's seen your show might think this is a moot point, but it's a leading question, let's put it that way. So what influence has that had on your life and your music?
Yeah, it's been huge, you know. I think I think any kind of multi-race human has questions, you know, lots of them. And that for me, when I was growing up, you know, early to late teens, I was kind of confused, you know, looking back. At the time, I kind of didn't realise what was going on, but basically, yeah, I'm neither Samoan nor Australian. Like, I just had that trip, you know. At times I really connected with the Samoan culture, and then other times, you know, I knew that I just wasn't that at all. And it took me a long time to realise that I was both, and that, you know, they both have... Yeah, they are. I am that, and it's amazing to kind of be, you know, comfortable in your skin and comfortable with your culture. And, you know, for me, my connection to Samoa is music. You know, basically, my uncles and my mum taught me how to play, and so that's kind of been my thing. And you know, like, on my drum kit, I have like a Samoan drum that basically I use. You know, and there's all of the beats that I play, I have this kind of Polynesian influence, and I can't really shake it. You know, it's one of those things that it's just me. It's just what I grew up with, and it's my influences. So, you know, I wear that as a badge these days. And you know, there's many other things other than just music that really inspire me about the Samoan culture. Like, I love how you know, involved and how respectful they are of family, you know, and community. And you know, it's quite a beautiful thing that they have, where, you know, usually over there your best friend's your cousin or your brother, you're just so involved in each other's everyday activities. So, you know, I really enjoy that part of it. And it's something that, you know, I try to replicate and try to live in my life, is just kind of being respectful of friends and you know, trying to be there for other people. It's a beautiful thing. But, you know, yeah, Samoans are really good at that, and there's bits and pieces from their culture I love to kind of, you know, take.
It's in all of you, Bobola. That smile. You have the Islander, you know, in your music and in your life and the way that you treat people. You have that Islander happiness and charisma and joy that you spread.
Awesome. Yeah, well, it's, you know, I'm inspired by it. I love it. I think that's great. And, yeah, it's, you know, I love how my mum can just kind of, she's just so good at being, she's so good at, like, doing nothing.
Mm.
You know, like, she just can sit there and chat. You know, we went to Samoa on a family trip and we went to an auntie's house for breakfast, and basically we had breakfast and then it was a long one because there was a lot of food, and then everyone just had a nap. So there's, like, you know, 20 people and we all just had a nap. And then we woke up and then we just kind of sat there chatting, and basically that was pretty much the day of it.
Wow.
Then we went home just before dark. So, you know, it's just like a day like that is just, you know, it's really beautiful. It's you know, I feel like the Australian side in me is like, oh, I feel guilty with that day because, you know, I should be doing some work to get ahead or this and that. But, you know, like, I think it is really important to do nothing and just be and then just let the day roll sometimes. And, you know, that, you know, my Samoan culture is a real reminder of that.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. I mean, I've had 2 days where we Airbnb'd our place out and just parked our motorhome here. I'm just here with just the kids. Danny's working in Melbourne. And there's a lot of things I could have done, but I thought, I'm just going to let these kids just go and play on the beach, and I'm just going to sit there. And I just, you know, I think of myself as cruisy, and I live, you know, my life. I think I always do what I want to do, but really, I mean, how often do I just do nothing? It's kind of, it is really rare for anybody in Australia. I think it's rare anyway. Mm.
Well, we've got that culture. Australian culture is like hardworking, you know, like we're reliable. And, you know, those words are great because it's, you know, it is true. And it is a great virtue to be, you know, back to the focus thing, to be focused and be a good worker. But, you know, far out, you can be a reliable relaxer. You know, and you can be, you know, and everyone needs that. You need that time off. You know, I sort of feel like lately, you know, I've been that plate spinner. You know, the plate spinners, you know, you've got like 5 plates in the air and you're just spinning them all and you're loving it and it's crazy. And you know, but what, imagine if all those plates were down and you're just like sitting down having a joint. Like, what a great, that's a great day too, you know. But for some reason that's looked upon as bad or as lazy. And, yeah, I feel like we should take that back, man, because, you know, everyone needs those lazy days, and the worst thing you could do is feel guilty.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree. There's a couple of things that brought up for me. One is, I don't know if anybody listening here hasn't travelled very much, you would be shocked. We think of ourselves as mallow here in Australia, and we're kind of casual in some ways, definitely. But one thing that shocked me from touring the world is I think we are about the hardest working people that I know. Like, especially if you compare it to our other Western buddies, like, now don't anyone get offended out there, but in Canada, in England, in, you know, America, and these are generalizations, but I just, yeah, the way I did things or the way other people did things, I was like, wow, in Australia they'd be, you know, they just work so much harder, and we think of ourselves as so laid back. And that was one of the great things about travelling, I think. Sometimes you realise, oh, let alone Europeans, and then we get to Islanders. But, you know, like, even in Europe, you know, it's often people aren't slaving. Like, we've got, in Australia, we've got, you know, such a great place and such a great landscape and all of these things, but people have got a lot of debt and they're getting up and they're working hard, you know, 6 days a week, some people 7, others 5, but people are working long and hard, and that's what we've always done. So, yeah, I think something I've got from this podcast with you is, like, you know, focus is important, but maintain your sovereign right to direct your focus in the way that's important to you, and if it's directing it towards rest and directing it towards chilling out and not doing anything, that's just as important.
Yeah, totally agree. It really is. But it's being present, you know, in that. Because how many times, like, I do it all the time, how many times you have, like, a day off and you're just kind of like, oh, I'll just do a few emails here, or, you know, I'll just kind of, oh, you know, I'll just do this, that, and you're sort of half there. So you kind of don't get either. You don't really get to finish anything that you're meant to be working on, and you don't get to relax. You know, it's kind of like double-edged sword a bit. Yeah, man. Well, far out. I think I got that too.
That's the best thing about this. Well, you know what? That's a it's an example of it, because we have these kind of conversations all the time.
Yeah.
But they're throwaway. But then we put this microphone on and we do a podcast. Now we're really directed at those words, and now we're taking notice of the words that are coming out of our mouth.
Yeah, it's true,
so it's an example of the focus that you're talking about. Okay, so like just in wrapping up, I want to ask this question for musicians first, and then for people in general. From your life thus far, for a young whippersnapper out there, or somebody, you know, any musician, are there any like daily practices or recommendations that you would advocate?
Learn how to nap.
Learn how to nap.
Yeah, I feel like naps, you know, well, actually, I got a bit of a nickname on some of the tours. They call me the Nap King.
Yeah.
Nap King Cole. And it is, you know, it's basically connected to rest, but basically, you know, a nap, a 20-minute nap, will set you up for so many amazing things. Like, you know, we talk about that focus, like think of the times when you're best, when you can best perform, you know, whether it's like work, whether it's, you know, anything really, even a party, or like if you just want to be, you know, you want to be your best self. If you're rested, then you're ready. You're ready to go. And the reason where I got it from was actually in my athletics days. I remember at a competition, Kathy Freeman was there, and she had a race on. She had like a 200-meter race on at like 4, and it was about, you know, 20 past 3, and I saw her, and she wasn't going to the warm-up track to warm up. She was finding a place to nap, and she had a 20-minute nap basically before her race.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do that. You know, she's Kathy Freeman. So I started sort of doing that before, you know, and now I can get down, I can do a 7-minute nap.
Wow.
In a band room if I need to. And a quick tip, if you can't nap, basically to get there, I reckon what you need to do is you need to lie down and you need to close your eyes and basically try not to fall asleep. As soon as you try to fall asleep, it's over. So what you do is you close your eyes, and if you can just close your eyes and be still for 5 minutes, then you've rested. You're done.
Wow.
So basically if you just start there, then you just kind of repeat that like over the course of days, weeks, months, whatever, then you'll find that sometimes you just doze off and then you'll kind of have a bit of a nap. So that's kind of your starter pack. Bobby Alou, nap starter pack.
Nap King Cole has laid it down fat. And do you know what? I don't know if it's coincidence, but I just saw a little YouTube clip, and I've sent it to a few people, and they were saying that I'll put it in the show notes. But all of these athletes, they have 12 hours sleep, which is usually a long sleep and a nap. And Usain Bolt, before one of his main records, he was napping. Like, he got up from his nap half an hour before he went out and did one of those fat world records.
Told you.
So onto it.
Told you.
And they were saying, you know, like, you've got all your bio hacks and your nootropics and your this and your that, but napping is one of the biggest ones. Sleep in general, quality of sleep. And it's funny, some of the biohackers that I've checked out, they are like, one guy, he's the main one, he invented the keto diet, Dave Usprey.
Yep.
And he is rigorously monitoring his sleep, and he put more stem cells in. He set a world record for how many stem cells he filled his whole body with stem cells. Like, I guess he chucked a couple of mil worth of stem cells into his body. And he was like, my sleep stats are off the chart. But he's frothing on sleep, you know, like he's, it's like he just won the 100 meter that he's, wow. He's like, I'm sleeping like a 20-year-old. And I'm like, really? You're boasting about sleeping? But it's, I guess it's like actually one of the most important things.
Mm. Well, it's fuel. You know, it literally is. It's kind of like, you know, I'm into working smarter. And if you can be like efficient and work your butt off for like, you know, X amount of hours and be present and be real, you'll get so much done. More done than underslept and like work the whole day. Mm. That's my theory. Mm. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, more bang for your buck, bro.
More bang for your buck, bro. I love that. And so I think that is a great, great, great little life. I mean, that's a great life hack as well as a muso hack. But do you have any other life hacks for the peeps listening to this right now?
Oh, man, I'm on the spot. There's been so many. There always is when I talk to you. Eh?
Yeah.
You're great. Well, the only thing that's in my head right now would be to say thank you and be to the people that you are close to. So thanks, Ash, for starting this podcast and for being, you know, keeping yourself in check and for starting this, because it's a wealth of wonderful information and it's been a great time to chat to you. And so, yeah, if you can kind of thank the people that you love and that you are close to, then, you know, it could go a long way.
Mm. That's brilliant. Don't make me cry now, bobble up. Well, that's really great. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show, brother.
You!
Away to the other side.